Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
And now, we're going to talk to our next guest.
Who?
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker show, the lovely Justine Cullen. Justine, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Justine runs Justine Cullen Jewellery.
Justine Cullen Jewellery. Yes.
And we're going to talk to you about that. But first of all, we're going to establish some ground rules here.
Okay.
She's not Canadian. She's from the West Coast.
LA.
From LA.
Perfect.
Warm.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I know.
I can what see happened? Why you moved here.
Yeah, thank you. I moved here for the weather.
Of course you did. Yeah,
I wanted some rain and green.
Yeah, you couldn't stand the sun.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Basically.
And whereabouts in LA are you from?
I grew up in a place called Topanga Canyon.
Right.
It's just off the coast highway, and it's situated sort of between Malibu and Pacific Palisades.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very beautiful place to grow up.
Absolutely, yeah. A few years ago, my sons and I hired an RV, and we drove the entire length backwards and forwards of the Pacific Coast High Road, and we surfed every single beach.
Amazing.
It was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, we have some very good surf along.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. We finished up at Big Sur as well in Northern California, which was really evil.
But, yes, yeah, and cold. The water
it was cold,
cold
and evil,
sharks,
but it was,
right?
Yeah, exactly. There'd be sharks. And
I'm more of like a sit on the land kind of person.
Right, okay. Cool. So what brought you to the UK, apart from the weather?
Love. Obviously.
All right, obviously. Yeah. And how long have you been here?
I've been here for 17 years.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I was in Holland before this.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so I was in Holland, and that's where I met my husband.
Right. Is he Dutch or?
No, he's English.
He's English, okay.
Yes.
Cool. Just want to check these things.
South London boy, originally.
South London?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Nice one. So tell us a bit about you. In terms of the work you do, the jewellery design that you do, how you got into that, what kind of things you do?
Basically, some years ago, I had a different business with a best friend, and we were sort of selling music. My husband, he's a musician.
Right.
He's a DJ. So we were taking sort of underground music at that time. Mm. We split our time between living in Holland and Los Angeles. My best friend.
Whereabouts in Holland were you?
Amsterdam.
Okay.
Yeah, so my best friend Sarah and I, we were splitting our time. Mm. And we were really picking up on all this unique sort of music and fashion and culture and kind of bringing it from Holland and bringing it over to Los Angeles, and then doing it in reverse and finding amazing things in Los Angeles and bringing it back with us. So,
yep, sure.
You know, no Facebook yet, no sort of online, none of that was happening. So it was really sort of just by word of mouth.
Cool.
So we sort of started to develop a really amazing network of contacts and people through that. And I met my husband through that as well, which was interesting. We kind of got to a point where that particular end of that style of music, that techno music, was kind of reaching a peak. And I could just sort of see that everything we'd built was sort of coming, you know, at that peak when it's going to work so hard to make it happen and get into shops and do all this. And I really wanted to go out on a high, and so did she. So I decided to move from Los Angeles, come and be in the UK with my now husband. And we kind of both needed a career change. And, well, I love cakes as well.
So cakes.
Okay. I know I shouldn't eat too many. There was a fascination with maybe baking or jewelry, but was there like a job in jewelry? And I remember my husband's face looking really confused when I asked him that, and he never really heard me speak about jewelry ever. So I had to learn how to actually make jewelry.
Right.
So I started really from the beginning.
So, hold on a cotton picking minute here, Justine.
Okay.
So this is an interesting part of the discussion we were having earlier about gaps in the market. This is a completely different take on it, isn't it? That says, what shall I do? Okay, I'll do that. Now I'll find out how to do it.
Yeah.
Cool.
And
like
I've got an audience already.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very clever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always was fascinated. Sarah as well, both of us. We were both fascinated with fashion and music and how to get in there and do something in there. But definitely, there's no social media yet. There really wasn't access to so much information like what we have now, which is really amazing.
Mm.
So it was very much fly by the seat of your pants and kind of make it up as you go along.
Right.
I did my first adult education class. I was heavily pregnant as well, so sort of at the end of my pregnancy.
You don't do things by half, do you?
Not really.
No, okay. No.
I liked your story earlier, actually, about kind of just being all in, because I'd say that's me. as well.
Yeah,
so,
go for it.
I think. So I remember the teacher being really sort of nervous. I wasn't allowed to touch any chemicals because I was pregnant. And I was frustrated because I wanted to be able to do everything right away. And, of course, I had thumbs for fingers, all thumbs. And did my first little bit. We were living in London. Then we had our son. And we decided to move from London because we didn't want to really raise him where we were living. So we moved here to Kent by chance. It wasn't really like a we know people here, so we didn't know anybody.
You got on the wrong train.
Yeah. My husband brought me here. He said it was the warmest part. He said it was warm here.
He's right. Yeah. He's right. We do have like a little microcosm climate.
Oh, yeah. Right. It's okay. Tropical. Ashford's well known for its tropical
or
weather.
Something, yeah. You know, so, yeah. It's not warm. It's warmer, apparently. So, yeah, I kind of got hooked. But it is beautiful here, and the people are friendly. So, anyways, we moved here, tiny baby. My husband travels for work a lot, so I was on my own quite a lot and didn't really know anybody. And I thought, how am I ever going to do this jewelry adventure then and in the middle of nowhere? And guess what? Where we moved, there was an adult ed class at the Tower School one night a week, 2 miles from my house that I moved to. I took it as a sign. I like those kind of signs sometimes.
So you enrolled in a jewelry class.
Yeah.
And what kind of things were you learning to do?
We were learning actually silversmithing, which at the time I didn't realize was different than jewelry making. And actually, they're completely two. They're interchangeable, but really, if you're going to be serious in either field, they are different.
They are different skills, yeah.
But my teacher, Owen, was just amazing. Obviously, I hadn't confessed to anybody that I had this secret fantasy of like a career in jewelry at that time. You know, I kept that to myself. I was kind of shy about even considering there's such a big skill set to learn. Mm. It's really difficult to do that. So that was my one night a week and my night out for 2 hours, baby at home.
Right.
And I kind of carried on like that for a couple of years to get some skill set behind me. My husband built me a little place to work and practice, and I think I just did it every hour that I had spare, practice. And eventually it kind of led me to, I found out about a magical place called Hatton Garden, which is the jewelry district. And there was a specialty class from school there. And I signed up for it. It was a 3-day course, but it completely changed my life. It showed me you could have a whole career. It was a booming industry. And there was space for me. So I'd say that was like the first big door that opened. That was some years ago.
Okay, so as far as you're concerned, was silversmithing the route you went, or did you swap to more conventional jewellery?
Yeah, I swapped to more conventional jewellery.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what kind of things, I kind of understand, I think, what conventional jewellery, silversmithing looks like.
Right.
What kind of things do you learn with ordinary jewelry, whatever you call it.
You actually, the items obviously are smaller. The skill set does transfer, but you work on much sort of, you know, items. You have to be able to wear them. I think that's been the most challenging thing to learn about designing jewelry. It has to look amazing, but it has to fit on your body. Be comfortable. I like quite big statement pieces. And that is really challenging to get something that's quite big. Mm. But when you wear it, I'm hoping you forget it's on. Mm. So, you know, it's just comfortable so you're not fussing over it or, you know, feeling like it's in the way.
Fantastic. So you started designing and making jewelry.
Correct.
And how long have you been doing that now?
My son is 14. So I think the first little study that I did was 15 years ago.
Okay.
And I picked up my first set of tools. But that first bit was obviously mixed in with, you know, being a mom's always been first, and raising him and fitting it around it. And as he's getting older, I have more time to dedicate to it.
Cool. And you have a website now which displays your jewelry. I had a quick look at it, and it looks really fascinating.
Thank you.
And gorgeous. So do you sell exclusively online?
No, I'm really a very sort of custom bespoke service, although my work is available online. My customer base has always spread sort of word of mouth and recommendations. I do a lot of custom work for people, specialty items, whether it's wedding or engagement, maybe just a unique item, you know, something different. And then I make my own little sort of limited edition collections on my website in silver, and then some in the fine jewelry range as well. So where I'm working in gold and diamonds and sparkly things.
Cool. Sweet. I want to bring in Chris in a moment, Chris Gase from Rift Accounting. Welcome back onto the show, Chris. It's good to see you again.
It's nice to be back.
You're looking a bit more relaxed than last time you were on. Last time we were fast approaching the end of January and tax submission year. Now we've only got April to worry about now.
That's right. So it's all going to kick off the new tax year again from next week.
Absolutely. I want to talk to you about some other stuff in a minute. But first of all, Chris, you've introduced us to Justine, and there's a fascinating part to her story that I just want to cover, because one of the things that Rift Group do is R&D tax credits. And I do believe that you're doing some work with Justine on R&D tax credits. Can you tell us a bit about that?
We are. So we have spoken about R&D tax credits when I've been with you before, and one of the things we've been keen to stress is it's not all about people wearing
labs and white coats. Yeah. And that's one of the interesting things, isn't it? And it's one of the many reasons that we wanted to hear from Justine, because people so often think it's about, you know, being in a lab and inventing a new material or something like that. But it's not. There's a lot more to R&D than just that, isn't there?
That's right. So R&D is all about doing something differently, whether that's a process or a product that's not in the market. If you're doing something that no one else is doing out there, or arriving at a position
by a different route,
then that could be R&D. So it's nice to have a real life example that we can show you that's not your typical preconception of what R&D is. So the way that Justine's been arriving at some of her end products is not the way that possibly anyone's done it before, so she'll be able to tell you about that better than I can.
So, Justine, secrets, so what are you doing differently?
I've had a lot of really sort of inventive designs, but more recently, in the last few years, I worked on a piece, and it took 2 years to build it. It was really complex, and it was very design-heavy. It has a certain pattern to it that's continuous, and it's really complicated in the way that we had to build it. And that's where the R&D portion could come in, because we had so many hours of sort of prototyping, making molds, going back to the beginning. That's a very long...
So what you're telling me, tell me if I've got this wrong, what you're telling me is that you've kind of had to invent a process for making this, and it's that process that is the unique part of it.
Large part of R&D is actually getting it wrong.
Yeah.
So yeah. And
you will do things and they won't work.
Yeah.
And you'll find another way to do it. So
it's experimental.
It is. Okay. So without those, if you did it right the first time, then... Yeah. There wouldn't be much experimentation.
Yeah. So what? Yeah, anyone could do that.
Like, some pieces are so straightforward, it wouldn't. There would be no need for it. But I've got another piece now to go with that first piece I worked on, and that's also complicated. And we've had to go back.
Can you tell us what the piece is?
Yes. Yeah, so it's a necklace called Midnight, and I've just
a necklace called Midnight. Yeah.
And it's crafted in white gold, 18-karat white gold, and has diamonds and black sapphires. It's very, very pretty.
Wow.
And we've just debuted it at the start of the year. We were chosen through the DIT, Department of International Trade locally.
Yeah.
We've hooked up with them, and they have a department stateside who selected us to participate in the Great Showcase event in Los Angeles at the British Consulate. So we got to debut it there, which was really exciting.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so it's kind of doing it.
So you're taking Coles to Newcastle. You're taking your stuff back home to LA and going, look what I made while I was away.
I'm a British brand. Yeah. I make everything here. I'm very passionate about that. I'm very proud to have the industry here, celebrate it. We have so much talent. And if we don't use it, it will vanish like any trade. You know, I feel very...
Fantastic. So have you been to LA with this Midnight necklace, or is it still something on the cards?
No, I have. So that was January.
Okay, and how did that go?
It was amazing. It was it was great, because during the process, we had 3 years of a secret with this necklace. We didn't tell anybody about it, apart from Rift, because we had the claim that we were dealing with.
Yeah.
But it was like the longest, most difficult secret to keep ever in my life. So that January was its first outing, and finally we could shout about it.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we brought it back here to debut it here alongside London Fashion Week.
Fantastic. And this piece, just focusing on Midnight for the moment, is it a one-off piece, or are you going to make a series of them, or how's that going to work?
So that's a one-of-a-kind piece, and then it will have a small capsule collection around it, which will involve several pieces to go with it, but Midnight is She's the Queen. That's it. So just a one there, and then a few pieces that will be available for special order after.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's absolutely brilliant. Justin, if people want to find out about the stuff that you're making and look at your collections and buy some of it, hopefully, how can I do that?
You can find me on my website, which is www. I'm waiting for you to say
World Wide Web.
Yeah, come on, Berg. You
sorry.
missed your cue.
I'm listening to you and I'm like, right, I want to ask this question. I'm controlling myself.
My fault. Yeah. JustineCullen.com.
Yep.
I'm on Twitter at JCJewelry.
Yep.
Instagram, I do a lot on Instagram.
Yeah, sure.
So please come and check me out there. And that's JustineCullen_jewelry.
Fantastic.
Or on Facebook.
Yep, cool. Yeah, no, Instagram works for pieces like that, doesn't it? Because it's picture-based. No, fantastic. We'll come back to you in a minute, Justine. Let's kind of talk to Chris now. So, Chris, you Rift Group have been looking, or Rift R&D Tax Credits have been looking at something very different there in terms of an R&D tax claim. But you're from the accounting side.
I am.
And we love accountants because they're not boring in the least, are they?
They're not.
They're not. They're really important. And I'm a big fan of accountants. And what's happening at the moment? What's the heads up? What do we need to look out for? What do we need to be aware of? What's happening?
Okay, so a few things going on at the moment. So we're coming up towards the end of the financial year for individuals, maybe not for your company, but there will be a lot of companies who've got March year ends, so it may be applicable for you as well. So
because you've got the official tax year starts on the 1st of April.
The tax year starts on the 5th of April, but everyone who's got a limited company will have their own tax year, which may or may not be in line with that. So when you're coming up towards the end of your year for company or individual, you want to think about any investments you want to make. So if you want to make any investments, do them before the end of your tax year rather than into the start of the next one. Otherwise, you've got to wait a year for that tax relief on it.
Yep.
So that's one of the things we'd be talking about. From next month, the pension contributions for auto-enrolment are going to increase.
Okay.
So pension contributions have been in for a few years now, but most people have now met their staging date, so they're having to...
Although I did notice that a few months back, HMRC started fining a few people, and they actually picked on small companies to fine, and fined them quite heavily, and they did that specifically to prove a point that it wasn't just big companies were after.
I think a lot of people thought, well, the little guys are going to get through the net.
Yeah, exactly.
So some people weren't complying with what was required.
Yeah.
So they have tried to make a statement with those.
They've hit them, yeah.
Most people now will be in a position where they should be offering a pension to their employees.
Yeah.
So contributions before were 1 and 1% for the employer and the employee. They're going up to 3 for the employee and 2 for the employer for next month.
Yep.
And they will go up again to 5 and...
They'll go up forever. Anything the government does always goes up and never goes down. Yeah, okay.
So that's happening next month. Mm. We've also got a reduction in the tax-free dividend allowance. So
That was a bit naughty, that, wasn't it, really?
It was. So a couple of years ago, they told us the dividend rules were going to change very significantly to what they were previously, so that you'd only be allowed £5,000 a year of tax-free dividends.
Mm.
And then very swiftly after that, he said from April 2018, it's going to go down to 2.
Yep.
So we're now at April 2018, so it's going to be 2.
Yep.
From next month. And I wouldn't be surprised if that number comes down
to 0.
To 0.
Yep. Absolutely. So there's quite a few changes, as always these days. There's lots of changes, so it's always worth talking to your accountants and finding out what's what. You know, I was a bit rude about accountants earlier, but I don't really feel that way because I work closely with my accountants because I find them really useful. And really helpful, and they tell me what I can't do. They go, you can't do that, Paul. I'm really? No, you can't do that.
You really can't
do that.
You can't do it anyway, then.
Yeah. I just don't tell them. Or I tell them and they go, oh, I've already done it, sorry. It's always good to talk to professionals and get professional advice on anything because the rules are just so complex now that you really do need that professional advice to know what's going on. And the rules change so often. That's one of the big problems that we face in business is rules change all the time, you know. I had a company that was on flat rate VAT for ages, and all of a sudden they snuck in and changed the flat rate VAT rules, and it completely threw the company out of whack because it was a big change to what we were doing. So, yeah.
Those changes to flat rate have really made that scheme
unviable.
Yeah, unviable.
Yeah, for it's just waste of time. Yeah.
Is there any positive things, Chris? Go on, try and find
out. Not really. It's the government we're talking about here. They don't do positive things.
How do you feel
things.
About it all?
About all of it?
Yeah. How do you feel about all these changes?
That's a big question.
About, you
well, it's all right. He earns money out of it.
one of the big things that's coming in, which I'm sure you will have touched on before, is making tax digital.
Yeah.
And that's getting ever closer, even though they do keep delaying it. So actually, that's going to make the requirements on small, very small business owner much more arduous than they are now.
Mm.
And for us, potentially, that's great because that's going to be more more business. But for those individuals who potentially haven't been able to kind of keep up with modern technology, it's going to be very difficult because they're going to be required to do everything on a some sort of cloud software that will submit to HMRC. There's no more keeping your cathedral books on ledgers anymore.
Or shoebox.
No, and you'll be surprised how many people still want to do that.
Mm, absolutely.
And when you're talking about businesses, you're not just talking about what you'd quantify as a business. Mm. You could be talking about a plumber who's self-employed and goes to work at the same place every week, or a labourer, or these sort of people who you wouldn't perhaps identify as a business, but HMRC identifies them as a business, so they're going to have to comply the same way.
Yeah.
And it's for these people, it's going to be a challenge.
We already spend 5,000 hours a year, this is on average, 5,000 hours a year complying with VAT regulations as businesses. So when it goes digital, and I'm not going to put words in Chris's mouth, so I'm going to tell you what I reckon is going to happen. Once they've gone digital with tax, so it's quarterly, they'll then move to having the tax in advance, which is what they do with businesses like mine, where I have to pay my income tax before I've earned the money. And that's where they're heading. They're trying to get the money in faster and faster and faster, and now they're trying to get the money in before you've even earned it. And that's where they're heading with it.
That's been the position in self-assessment people for quite some time.
Absolutely.
I could see it going that way with other taxes. VAT is going to be the first tax that they move into making tax digital.
Yeah.
Because it's the easiest one to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other taxes will take longer, which is why they keep delaying it.
Yeah. Mm. So, lots happening as always. Do stay in touch with your accountant, whoever they may be, because they've always got good information to tell you. And you need to stay on top of it, you know, because it's easy to fall foul of some of these things. And unfortunately, in a world, we were talking to Simon earlier about the benefits of technology. There are some drawbacks to technology too, that they can find you when you haven't done something, and they can find you really quickly. So, you know, that's where we're going. Just coming back to Justine, what are you working on next?
Well, tomorrow, actually, I have something quite exciting to do with Midnight, actually. Tomorrow, model Nancy Sorrell, she lives locally here.
Oh, Nancy, Vic Reeves' wife.
Vic Reeves. They're attending National Film Awards in London.
Right.
And I will dress her in the necklace.
Fantastic.
We joined up and did an amazing photo shoot with the necklace just before the Fashion Week event, because we did that together as well.
Right.
So tomorrow she'll be wearing that. And then...
And what's Jim wearing? A Vic Reeves.
I'm not sure yet.
Oh, you're not doing anything for him?
Who knows?
Okay.
Who knows? Maybe. Could be a surprise. And then I'm back to LA in May, for the beginning of May, for Brit Week.
Right, okay.
And Brit Week is sort of, it's where they celebrate film and fashion and all things like that for the month of May.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that. And
thank
you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show, Justine. It's been a real pleasure to hear from you, and also from Chris. And thank you, Chris, for the update on where we are with accounting and tax practices at the moment. Do stay with us for the remaining few minutes of the show. But for the moment, Justine Cullen and Chris Gase, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Cool.
Thanks for having me.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.